You're listening to Family Personalities, a podcast where we use personality type to help change the way you think about your family. I'm Sandra Etherington, your personality type practitioner.
And I'm Em Levy, personality type enthusiast.
Join us while we talk about family, relationships, and parenting, all within the context of personality type. Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about insightful intuition. The technical name is introverted intuition in kids. This is a cognitive function in Myers-Briggs. We're going to talk about how it shows up in kids and what they need from you. And this is the dominant or driver function for INFJs and INTJs. And it's the auxiliary or the co-pilot function for ENFJs and ENTJs. If this is all very confusing to you and you don't even know what a cognitive function is, I suggest going back and listening to episode 39, where we gave an intro to cognitive functions. And for this function, insightful intuition in parents, check out episode 47. That's a really good background episode to kind of get the idea of what introverted intuition is. And then when you bring it into kids, it kind of makes more sense in the context of adults first. And remember, if you don't know Myers-Briggs at all, you can find all the basics at familypersonalities.com/basics. So today, Em has a family thing that she's dealing with. And so I've brought in a special guest host. It's his second time on the podcast, but the first time was on a bonus episode, so you may not have caught it, but I have Daddy Eric with me.
Hi, everyone.
Want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Daddy Eric. It's weird to hear you say that. I'm used to hearing that from the kids more. Yeah, I'm excited to be doing a real episode. You know, looking at the show notes, there's a lot of lingo, so I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of questions that hopefully the listeners might benefit from, because I wouldn't say that it's all Greek to me, but I feel like I'm going to be learning as I go, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Eric he understands the basics of Myers-Briggs, like the kind of either-or letters. What's your type?
INTJ.
Yeah. And so he uses this function. I use this function. We use it as adults. It's both of our driver functions, because it's the driver function for INFJs and INTJs. And then the reason I chose him to stand in for M today is because our son Riker is an INTJ and he drives with this function. So I thought Eric might have some color to put around this. You know, I have lots of color to put around it, but he might have a different perspective on it and maybe have some stories from his own childhood too. You can now donate to the podcast. I've added a link at familypersonalities.com/donate, which helps support and keep me going on all this great content that you've been consuming. Also, let me help you parent more easily and peacefully through the use of personality type. I use the cognitive functions to give you a full understanding of your child and every member of your family. You can sign up today or schedule a quick Zoom to ask questions at familypersonalities.com/services. So remember, today we're talking about how the cognitive function of introverted intuition, which I've nicknamed insightful intuition, shows up in our kids and what they need from you. It's the dominant function for INFJs and INTJs. So that means these things that I'm going through are going to be like, definitely you're going to see them like a lot of the time in your INFJs and your INTJs. It's the co-pilot function for ENFJs and ENTJs. So that means it's just kind of like their backup function. It's still a really big part of who they are, but because they're extroverted and they lead with an extroverted function, you might not see it as much. You might not notice it as much. It's like when they're going inside, that's when they're using this function. So introverted intuition or insightful intuition, it's an introverted function. It deals with the inner world. This is happening on the inside. It might give a little, if you know your kid is an INFJ or an INTJ, it might give you a little more understanding of what's happening when they're in their head so much. It's not something you are necessarily going to see or that they're necessarily going to be able to communicate to you. And it's also a perceiving function, and that just means that it deals with how we take in information. The sensing and intuition functions are how we take in information, and then the thinking and feeling functions are how we make decisions. And this one is about how we take in information. So the definition that I've given insightful intuition. Insightful intuition users take in information by looking for hidden meanings and patterns and extrapolating them into a bigger picture and an insight for the future. So in episode 47, when we talked about what this looks like in parents, we talked about this function having four facets. And I'm just going to go through these really quick. If you want the full thing, go back and listen to that episode. But the four facets are future insights, really great at picking up on patterns in the world and creating those into insights for the future. great at perspective taking. So being able to shift perspectives and look at a problem or a situation from all different angles to be able to find the angle that makes the most sense to them. They're very self-observing. So kind of noticing their own thought patterns. And it's funny because I was not really relating this to kids very much. And then I had a moment in bed last night with Riker. So each of us take kind of fall asleep with one kid. You usually fall asleep with Ripley and I fall asleep with Riker, but it's fun. I think I have the better kid to fall asleep with because he always has really interesting things to say at night.
Mm-hmm. Ripley kind of goes back and forth. More than anything, she's just playing with stuff and trying not to go to sleep. So for me, it's more a battle of trying to be patient with her and not telling her, just go to sleep.
Yeah, Riker gets into like his philosophical and then he wants to like talk about things with me. And he went very internal last night, was like observing his own patterns, which I thought was interesting. So I'm starting to see that side of this come out in him. And then the fourth facet is novel problem solving. And we talked about how even in brain scans that Dario Nardi does of people's brains who use this function, he sees them go into a flow state, like an in-the-zone state, which most people go into when they're doing a skill that they've honed really well and they've practiced so many times that it's like second nature. And these types actually go into that flow state when we're tackling a new problem. It gets us really excited and we love looking at it from all the different angles and trying to tackle things. Does that resonate with you?
I was doing that this morning. I was, you know, I know I have this because I do consulting work, so I'm constantly doing new projects. And I always feel like I'm in this slight state of frustration until I get that flow going because I always get a little bit worried. What am I going to do? How am I going to figure this out? And I feel like it's always in the back of my mind. And I had one of those things going today and I wanted to hop on the computer and get it going. Even though I was planning on diving in tomorrow, I was a little worried about having enough time. So I just kind of kickstarted it this morning, and now I feel like I'm all ready to go, and I just kind of parked it for a little bit, but I'll hit the ground running tomorrow, and I feel better about it.
Yeah, so when it was just sitting there on your to-do list in your head, it felt stressful, but then when you actually got to tackle the problem and start looking at the different ways to solve it,
yeah,
that felt good.
I feel good. Now I feel like I can go off and do this with you and enjoy the rest of the day, and I won't have it kind of hanging over me.
So before we get into what it looks like in kids, I just wanted to give a reminder. We talked about it in the parents episode, but this is the rarest of all the 8 cognitive functions. So there's 4 types that use it, right? INFJs, INTJs, ENFJs, and ENTJs. And those 4 types only make up 5% of the population. And why is that important? Why am I saying that? Not just because, yay, look at us, we're unique, but maybe a little bit of that. But because I think it's really important to understand if you have a kid who uses this function, that they're not showing up in the world the same way that the majority of the population is. And I think that's important because it might lead to them sometimes feeling as though they don't fit in and not really understanding why. Maybe feeling like they're not understood in school and the way they learn by their friends. And for you as a parent to be able to understand the gifts that this function provides so that you can help them see that in themselves and help them stretch to be able to communicate in the way that other people communicate, to be able to kind of bridge that gap between the way that they're thinking and the way that other people are thinking. Okay, let's dig in now. We're going to talk about what this function looks like in kids. And when we're going through this list of things, this will be true most of the time with your INFJ and your INTJ kids, and it's going to be true some of the time for your ENFJ and ENTJ kids. And you'll notice we talk a lot about like the introversion side of this, and obviously that part's not going to be true for your ENFJ and ENTJ kids because they lead with an extroverted function. But the first thing, this is definitely a very introverted trait. So this is definitely for your INFJs, your INTJs. Insightful intuition is an internal process of pattern analysis, and therefore they're really comfortable when they're oriented to their inner world. And they're going to want to spend a lot of time there. Doesn't mean they don't come out and play with their friends and talk with you, but they're going to be most comfortable if they get a lot of time to themselves. They're going to be exhausted when they have to spend a lot of time in their outer world. They tend to enjoy being alone or just watching from the sidelines, especially if something's new or unfamiliar. And they might be found daydreaming and imagining worlds and scenarios inside their own head. Is anything coming up for you with yourself or Riker?
You know, a lot of it I think of now, but trying to relate back to before or when I was younger in school or even before school, I definitely got labeled daydreaming a little bit in school. And it wasn't like I wasn't paying attention. I was just thinking about something else. And I think, you know, depending on the teacher, if a teacher, because I always did fine in school, I was, you know, I understood things. I wasn't behind. There was none of that. But I could tell some teachers, they just didn't like that. They could tell that I wasn't paying attention, and it was just like a sore spot. But other teachers were, kind of took the point of view of, you know, Daddy Eric's doing fine.
Wow, that was your name even that?
Yeah.
How did they know you were going to be a dad?
I don't know. But, you know, in any case, you know, they could see, yeah, he's doing fine. You know, he just, I wouldn't say spaces out, but just like there's times where my head just goes somewhere else, but I can always keep up and catch up. But for some teachers, I think they thought it was more like intentional. Mm. They took it personal, or like I wasn't interested in what they're doing, and it wasn't necessary. It didn't really line up with that. It's just my head would just go to other places, think about other things.
Yeah. And definitely both of us do this to each other now.
What do you mean?
We're like, we're zoning out, thinking about our own thing, and the other one's like, hey, are you listening? Are you there?
A little bit. Yeah. Not a lot.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely noticed this in Riker, but I think you and I, because we both use this function, it's not weird to us.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like all of us would rather be in our own worlds, in our heads. And so we don't really necessarily notice it that Riker's doing it too.
Yeah. I don't notice it either, because I'm sure he does. And it doesn't strike me as it's odd weird. In any
yeah.
way.
She's like, yeah, of course you're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a second way that this might show up in your INTJ, INFJ, and your ENTJ and ENFJ kids is that insightful intuition kids are drawn toward understanding the world. They are keen observers of the world around them from as early as babyhood. And in one of the books that I like to read about kids and type, shoot, I can't remember the name to cite it. Whatever. Some of the literature around this talks about babies just kind of like, even as babies, these kids are just kind of like wide-eyed, just kind of like taking everything in. And that's definitely when I think of Riker as a baby. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he always had a scowl on his face too. He was like that kid, like someone would wave to him in a grocery store and he would just like crinkle his eyes and look at them like, why are you doing that? They can often be heard asking why. And may be drawn to science, religion, or other subjects and theories that explain the mysteries of the world.
Yeah, I know when I was Riker's age, I always got along with people that liked to talk a lot. Because I would get in those phases where I'd just be, why? And I'd want to know more and more and more. And, you know, looking back, I could see where that, I'm sure that probably annoyed some people in the family. Just like, stop it.
Yeah.
But other people really enjoyed it. And they thought, oh. Made me seem more engaging than I would normally be, and they enjoyed the back and forth.
Yeah, you talked about before feeling like you were just kind of like an adult in a kid's body for a long time.
Thondra, I just heard Bill Burr's rant saying how women should be supporting female athletes and not Real Housewives who just yell at each other.
That's ridiculous. Real Housewives is a sport. Join us on From the Bleachers, where we analyze the strategy and gameplay that our favorite reality stars use to earn additional seasons of play and social media fame.
And if you're lucky, Sandra will pull out her apology play rubric so you can all see what an easy grader I am.
I'm sorry, Mandy, but if you think Monica's apology to Heather on Salt Lake City deserved anything over a 2.5, you're delusional.
Whether we're breaking down confrontation play, relishing the bravo, bravo, bravo moments, or awarding a tardy for the party, we are the only place you'll find in-depth analysis of the plays that your favorite housewives are making on our screens.
From the Bleachers, a Real Housewives game analysis is available everywhere podcasts live.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely had relatives tell me that. They're like, oh, you know, talking to you now is the same as when you were 4 or 5. It's not really any different. You just know more about the world than you did then.
So yeah.
The scope of your questions change. But I always felt like I was just trying to understand things and learn from other people that have been around longer than I have. That was kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Riker went through, I mean, he still is like a why kind of kid, but he definitely went through that why phase where it was like, he had two responses to everything. And I think the first response was probably be more from his second function, which for INTJs is efficient thinking. It's just a very, he was just very negative. And so his first response to everything was always no. If you asked him a question, no matter what the question was, the first response was no. And then his other big word that he used all the time was why. I'd be like, okay, it's time to go now. Why? You know, like, I can't even think of examples. What was he like when he was like four? I want to say this is when he was like two, three, four. Just like constant why. And it seems like, oh, that's great that he's interested in the world. But when you're, you know, busy and trying to take care of all this stuff, and maybe you're an introverted parent like I am, and you just like constantly have to verbalize everything, it just can feel really exhausting.
Yeah, I guess what I think of when I hear him saying why is just him questioning rules.
He does that a lot now too. And, yeah,
and any rule, and like why is it's like, why do I need to do that? Why is that rule? Why is that rule in place?
Yeah.
What does it really mean? Does it mean this? And kind of pushing the boundaries of it, and kind of just trying to understand the boundaries of that rule. And then if he's not agreeing with it as you're going along, you're just going to get more why and probably some no.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then being drawn to science, religion, or other subjects and theories that explain the mysteries of the world. Riker does currently want to be a scientist, he says. But he has a lot of questions about, like, existential questions. Like, you know, we're not religious in our house, but he kind of picks up on religion in the world and has a lot of questions about God. And, you know, he understands that we don't necessarily, you know, believe in or worship God in our house, but other people do. So why is that? Why do we not? Why do they? You know, and I love that kind of discussion. I actually think it's really great and I encourage it. But he'll just talk on that for ages. Or he has lots of big questions about death. What happens after people die? You know, and why do they die? Why don't our bodies just go on forever? And like, he really wants to talk about all this stuff and just get to the bottom of it. And he's not satisfied if I say, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's hard to have that conversation without ending it there at some point.
Right, because we don't know. I mean, some people, you know, have, some people feel like they know, but I feel like I don't know. Okay, kids who use this function, this would be all of them. Your INFJs, INTJs, and your ENFJs and ENTJs are drawn to novelty. And this is the same as the other intuition function as well. Kids who use this have an attraction to finding new ways of doing things, which leads them to be pretty creative and imaginative. So whether they're drawn to art, whether it's writing, whether it's dramatic play, they're going to be finding their own unique way to approach their chosen activity. So like when you think of like two kids taking, like, who are into art, you know, I see Ripley, who's really into art, as being more like she wants to follow, like, how do I make this look like what it's supposed to look like, and tell me the step by step to make a cat look right. Sometimes she can then go and play from there, but she really wants to kind of step by step take it through, maybe copy what other people are doing to be able to make hers look better. Whereas Riker, he's not that into art, but when he does it, it's more like, on the intuition side, it's more like free form. He wants to find his own way of doing it. But with Riker, I feel like you can apply it in other places better.
I mean, I guess I just think about it in playing board games or any game. You start with the rules out of the box, and once you've done it a couple of times, he starts throwing in, you know, curveballs, or, well, why don't we do it this way? Or, I mean, now whenever we play Monopoly, I think there's three or four different versions. So whenever he asked me to play, I don't know, some of them are like, they're a little too far out there for me, and I actually don't enjoy them. So
Yeah. Whenever
we talk about playing a game, I always ask him, well, which one, what kind, what type, which one do you want to play?
Yeah, he loved Monopoly when we first started playing it. But yeah, after like a month or so, he was like, made up his own new Monopoly game that had new rules, different amounts of money you receive, different rules about what space you land on. I don't really play it with him. Maybe you know the rules than I do.
Stuffed animals involved, playing very specific functions on different teams. And it's just, it's super complicated.
And only he
knows the rules. So it's frustrating to play because I don't really know what's going on. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And sometimes it's just hard to tell if, like, so you're trying to be strategic when you're playing a game like that, right? And it's just like, if I don't understand what's going on, I don't know if I'm making the right decision. And then it just makes me feel frustrated or like, I don't know what I'm trying to accomplish. So I'm just kind of going through the motions and waiting for him to say if it's this or that. And
yep.
So he doesn't understand that it's not as fun for the other person when they don't know what's going on the way he does.
Right. Yeah. And he does this with his friends a lot too. Like he comes up with like, he's really into Pokemon. He's really into Minecraft. He's really into Roblox. But he, you know, from years ago, he would, once he became obsessed with something, like Pokemon was the first one out of those things that he became really obsessed with. He came up with a way when his friends are over, without the cards even involved, to play a Pokemon game. And it had his own set of rules that he had applied. And he would just be like, come play this Pokemon game with me. And like, you're a this kind of Pokemon and I'm a this kind of Pokemon. And we have to do this and we have to do this. And he kind of directs his friends how to do it. And you might see a little more of the directing the friends with your T's. So your ENTJs and your INTJs. INFJs, ENFJs are a little more people pleasers. So they might have their own ideas, but they're going to kind of see how people are reacting to them and not maybe not be so dictatorial. I was going to say bossy, but I don't know. What's a better word? Directional?
Yeah, I don't think it's boss.
Okay, well, I know you don't, Mr. INTJ. Okay, another way this can show up in your kids, and this is for all the intuition types, really, especially when it's in that driver's seat, but if it's in the co-pilot seat as well, is that they have a difficulty with practical and routine details. So because it's all about the big picture and novelty, doing something over and over again the same way and doing something in the physical world, that can be really exhausting for all intuition types, whether they're kids or adults. So they can have a difficult time with things like brushing their teeth every night, putting away their toys. It's just exhausting for them to deal with anything in the practical world and anything too repetitive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look forward to bedtime because of the toothbrushing.
Yeah.
I just like...
And you're in charge of toothbrushing.
And I'm in charge of it, so I have not been able to master it. And so it's probably a little bit, you know, because I can relate to what you're saying too, just for myself personally. So having to do the same thing over and over is a little frustrating for me to begin with. But then when they have a problem with it, I feel like I'm on my last nerve way faster than I should be just because of what it is.
Yeah. And it's at the end of the day and we're all tired and exhausted by then. I mean, it's embarrassing to admit, but I've had trouble with my brushing my teeth routine my whole life. It's like at the end of the day, I have the least energy and I don't like routine details. And so that's always was a hard thing for me to put into place. And I had really bad teeth in high school, early adulthood. And then I just realized as I started getting more dental problems, like I have to make this happen, but it's hard.
I think it's why it's easier for me to brush my teeth in the morning than at night. Yep. Just because I'm fine with kind of doing repetitive stuff in the morning and getting myself going. But yeah, at the end of the day, it feels 10 times harder.
Yeah. Yeah, putting that nightly routine in place has been like it's something I'm finally at. it took me many years in my adulthood to get a good nighttime routine going to take care of my face and my teeth and all that. So, I have empathy for him, but it's also just like, come on.
It's more like, come on.
As intuition parents neither you or I put a lot of pressure on them to have very many routines that we require them to do because we don't like very many routines. And so it's like one of the very, very few they have to do. So it just feels like, come on, this is all we're asking of you. Like, please.
It's kind of the same thing in the morning. They've got their little routine they have to do for school. And, and you know they know it. It's just like, why aren't you doing it?
Yeah. They're better at that now. I think the picture thing has helped and there's incentives for Riker. Okay. Another way this can show up in our kiddos is that they're very visionary. So insightful intuition kids use their love of finding insights to come up with great plans for the future. And they're most excited when they're thinking about a new project or idea. I can think of something Riker's come up with many times that I've just been like, I don't want to deal with it. But he's always wants to do a yard sale. And like, he's always thinking of ways to make money.
And yeah, I kind of forgot about that. I haven't heard him mention that.
Well, the way that I put it off is like it's winter, like, and we're not going to do a yard sale in the winter. It's freezing cold out. So we'll see if he brings it up again now that the weather's turning. But it's like the reason I don't want to, like, I love that he has this idea and like, I'm going to sell my money and then I'm going to sell my things and use my money for this. And like, he has this grand idea in his head, but it's like the things that he wants to sell. I'm like, I'm not going to get any money for that. And like, what you want me to go out and like advertise this for you, or you're just going to put it in the driveway. We're on a small court. Nobody drives in and out of it. And, you know, but trying to explain these practical things don't really compute with him. He just has this great idea and he's excited about the great idea. And like putting the little pieces into place can be frustrating for him that they don't pan out the way that he wants them to.
We'll see. I mean, he wanted to, he even had the idea of moving it over to the busier street across the way to get more traffic.
Yeah.
Which feels a little bit mortifying to me to kind of stand out there with all of the junk that I know he's going to sell and try and flag cars down or something. It sounds terrible, but
so for me, it's not mortifying. It's just like, really, this is just not how I want to spend my day, sitting on a street with you. And I have to be there. If it's in front of our house, I'm okay. Like going inside, no one's actually going to show up. But if you're over on some street, then I got to be there with you.
Yeah, I don't know. We can always just keep an ear out for neighbors if we hear about anyone doing a garage sale. So maybe we can, well, we can have a table too.
Yeah. We can join in on someone else's multifamily.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. So they may, because they're so excited about thinking about a new project or idea, they might even talk about, especially when they're younger, talk about and plan the new game they want to play with their friends more than they actually play it. Because it's the idea that's so exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest part for me is when he starts bouncing all that off me. And it's like we're not even playing a game. We're just kind of acting it out. And he's just telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. And then he's figuring out the next part. And it's just like, it's hard enough for me playing a game when the rules are kind of fishy. But if there's not rules to begin with and I don't know what we're trying to do, I don't know. It's not fun for me. I have a hard time doing that. Yeah, with him.
Well, because it's at an 8-year-old level. Maybe when he's at a 16-year-old level, you might enjoy some of the things he's trying
to do. Oh, sure. Because I'd probably have more input into what we're doing as opposed to now, you know, I'm some Roblox character. He just kind of directs and like, I don't know what that person is or what they're actually like.
So what came up for me was the whole YouTube channel thing.
Hmm.
He's been really excited about, he watches people playing Roblox or Minecraft on YouTube. And he wanted to create his own YouTube channel to have like videos of him playing Roblox and whatnot. And he has grand plans. It's not just like, I want to put these videos up and maybe my friends and family will see them. But it's like, he wants to become like the number one YouTuber in the entire world. And like, I even told Ripley was like, this isn't very exciting. And he was like, you don't think becoming the most famous YouTuber in the world is exciting? I was like, well, okay, well, okay, what makes you, and then, I was trying to talk to him about, okay, what makes a good video? What do you like about this? He has this one, I can't remember what the guy's name is, this one YouTuber that he watches a lot. What makes his videos good? And I was kind of watching one of them with him. And it was like all this really complicated editing and like sound effects and stuff like that. And I was like, all this, you have to learn how to do these things and yada, yada. And he's kind of like, like, what? I got to do what? Like, can I just like become a famous YouTuber without any work?
Yeah, I don't know what he's expecting. I mean, he mentioned there was a kid at school who does it. He's like, he has 3 or 4 followers already. And then the next time I hear him talking about it, he's talking about a million. So I'm like, are you trying to beat the kid at school that has 4? Or are you trying to get a million? There's a big difference there. The amount of work that you'd have to do that. So.
Yeah. Well, and then it's like, it took so much effort on your and my part to kind of get him going on it, because it was like, we had to figure out, first of all, did it feel safe for him to have a YouTube account that was open? And we said, we're looking into all, you did most of the work on this. You were looking into all that. You were trying to figure out how he could record Roblox on his tablet, how we post from there, all that kind of stuff. And so he was very impatient with this whole process, like constantly on you, like, Dad, have you figured out this part yet? Have you figured out this part yet? And then when you got it all set up, what happened? Because now it's kind of flopped. Like, he doesn't talk about it at all anymore.
Well, it kind of goes back to that expectation he had of being able to make videos like that one guy. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, here's what we can do on your tablet. Mm-hmm. And it's not nearly as cool mm-hmm. as what that guy can do, just based on limitations of the tools. And then he was just kind of like, oh, that's it. So he just kind of left it there.
Yeah.
And he kind of stopped asking. Yeah. I was like, we tried 5 different tools and it's like, they're all kind of about the same, nothing great, no easy way to do what that guy was doing. And once he kind of saw the limitations and like, oh, this is not going to be that cool, that he lost interest. But maybe, you know, maybe that's good in a sense that he was able to realize that, oh, this isn't like a great product that I'm putting out there. I don't know if I want to do it.
Yeah.
But it would have been interesting to see if we could have, you know, come close to doing something like he would have done. And I'd like to see his reaction to the amount of work and time that it would take just to do one video like that guy who's done thousands of them.
Right. Yeah, I think in a couple of years, he'll have a little more skill set to be able to do that and to be able to do it on his own when he can read and whatever else.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really great example of like getting so excited about the vision and then reality not measuring up to it, not understanding what goes into things. And, you know, that these kids will get better at that with age. The more, especially the more that you let them try these things that they're thinking about and they're so excited about, but it's still going to be a struggle their whole lives, even as adults. Like I talked about in the parent episode a lot, how a lot of times these, the visions that I have, and then when it comes to the reality, there can be like a sense of disappointment. We can be, have a difficult time predicting how much time something is going to take because we don't think of all the practical details that go into it as easily. They also can be really just confident in their visions and insights and hold really tight to them. So the fact that he realized that it wasn't going to be and he kind of gave up, that's actually, I almost see that as a little bit of a maturity thing because it can be hard for him to accept reality sometimes, but also his insights. And he has a confidence over his insights, just like when he has decided that he understands something now because he's gone through his internal insightful intuition process and he has like, oh, this is the insight. This is how I understand this thing. He is so confident about it. Like for an 8-year-old to be like, you'll tell him something, you know, I'll hear him in the backseat of the car, right? Explaining something to Ripley. And I'm like, oh, that's actually completely wrong. Right. So I'm like, oh, actually it's this other way. And he'll say, no, it's not. And I'm like, what? Well, actually it is. Like, this is not an opinion. This is actually a fact. Let me explain the difference between facts and opinions to you. But he just has this confidence that at 8 years old, he understands the world better than anyone else.
I think that's going to serve him well in the future. I mean, I've worked with lots and lots of smart people that just didn't have the confidence in what they were saying. And they might say, well, here's three different ways to do this. I'm like, well, you know that inside and out. Just tell me which one's the best one. And they can't do it. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like, I think the difference in a lot of cases is between people that are really successful and people that might not be as successful is just being able to commit to something and have confidence and go with it. Because even if it's not 100% right, you'll figure that out and you'll change.
Later.
But it's that I'm not sure what to do can get you stuck. I feel like half of my success has just been when I'm the same way as him. Might not be right, but I feel it's right, and I'm going to convince the people around me it's right, and that's the way we're going to go. And then it just keeps things moving. And whether it works out perfect or not, if I see it's a problem, we'll readjust, and I'll be harder on myself about realizing, oh, that's not right. We're going to pivot and do something different. But I won't let myself get stuck. I feel worse about getting stuck than about going in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm really seeing this combined more with your guys' second function. So INTJs, ENTJs, they use a second function called efficient thinking or extroverted thinking. And that really, those two really combine to not only a confidence in your insights and your visions, but then a drive to communicate them to others and to make them happen, you know, kind of plan and build things. In the other side, in our feelers, so our INFJs and our ENFJs, there's going to be more of a... there's a little more of like a people pleasing and not wanting to come off certain ways. So they're going to read other people more and be like, I don't want to come off as overconfident. I don't want, so they may have like an internal confidence over their ideas, but it may not be communicated in the same way as is with thinkers. So if you have an INFJ child or an ENFJ child, you may not see this quite as much. You're going to see it some though. They do have an inner confidence, especially if there was someone they're close with and they feel safe with, then they might express that confidence more. Because I remember feeling pretty confident about the way that I thought things were and the way that I thought things should be, but communicating it to people was a totally different thing. I hardly ever came out with what, and like, if someone said, no, you're wrong about this, I would never have been like, no, I'm not, like Riker does, right? So there's just a little difference in the thinking feeling there. Okay, so those were kind of the, what it looks like in kids. And now I want to talk about, if you have a child that uses this function, what do they need from you? And we already talked about maybe the annoyances that can come with some of these things and the ways that you and I struggle a little bit with meeting those needs. So let's talk about some solutions. One thing, especially when they lead with introversion, so INTJs, INFJs, is, and this is for all introverts really, is just respect their need for quiet time alone. Much like we talked about with parents, this is key for their mental health, to have time to process these insights and spend time in this function. I really like to use the 80-20 rule with kids. So like 80% of their time using preferred functions, 20% of the time stretching. That means they need a lot of time, and it doesn't necessarily have to be completely alone, but, you know, with one other person, just in a quiet space that's not too much noise and too much going on, is really going to be a much more comfortable spot for them than if they're, you know, in school. Say they're, it depends on the school, right? But if they're in school that is a very chaotic environment, like our school happens to be, there's a lot of different people, a lot of different changing from space to space, and then they go straight from there to like a team sport, and then you want to try and run errands with them after school, and then have a big talk at family dinner about something, like, you are wearing them thin. They need time to decompress. They probably don't want to talk in the car ride home. Just let them kind of be in their own world. Don't try to draw them out all the time. Let them watch from the sidelines first for an activity. And this is the same for all introverted types too. They're going to do better if they can observe first and participate on their own terms when they're ready. And for both of our kids, this was especially when they were littler, like as far as going to like a new gymnastics class or something like that. It was like the first few classes even, Riker wouldn't participate at all. He just needed to watch. And that was so frustrating when we were paying for it. But eventually he got in there and he did it. And then he enjoyed it. And then he was able to, after that, jump in right away.
Yeah, it can be hard to get them going. Because even just like, hey, let's try and do something that I like to do. And do you want to do it with me? And they're excited because they know I do it and they want to try it. But then when I try and get them to do it, oh, I don't want to do it right now. All right. Oh, no, I don't. I feel like I'm twisting their arm. It's like, well, I thought you wanted to do it. Maybe you don't. It can be a bit of a challenge to kind of get them started.
Yeah. And even like when we got that badminton net in the backyard for the first time, I remember the first few times Ripley didn't want to try. She just wanted to watch.
Yep.
And after she watched all of us playing for a little bit, then it was like we were slowly able to coax her out. Like, here, try it on your own for a little bit and then try it with us. Yeah, they just want to see and check things out. They're not ready to jump in until they've had it time to. And Ripley's side, it's going to be, how does she feel about this? And on Riker's side, it's going to be like an observing and understanding it before he wants to participate.
Yeah, although they both have the, I don't want to do it if I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
Gene.
For sure.
Although I don't know if that's universal.
Yeah, I think it's universal, but to varying degrees. Encourage their curiosity. So you want to create a positivity around their, for example, maybe incessant question asking. And asking why. Try not to make them feel flawed for this. So if you're a parent who prefers introversion like myself, maybe outsource. We talked about this when we were talking about extroverted intuition in kids, which is probably even, you need it even more. But let them chat with grandma or grandpa over Zoom or your spouse so that you get a break. Just like, okay, I hear you have a lot of questions about this. And it is that time of day where I'm just tired. I have to make dinner. I don't have the space for it. Instead of like, stop asking why. Like, but why are you always asking why? That's really annoying. Or shutting it down like that. Like, is there someone else they can go to? Or can you say, hey, I'd love to talk about this at bedtime or whatever. Like, encourage their curiosity while still understanding your own needs. You can Google things too, by the way. A lot of times Riker's not happy with my, I don't know. So look up a YouTube video and then he can watch that. And then he feels satisfied. And then I didn't have to put in the labor to explain it to him.
That's a good idea.
You can also encourage their creativity and imagination. So provide a variety of creative materials, whether it's art supplies, advancing art supplies as they get older and more able to use different types, or things to build with. Like with Riker, I actually keep this. He went through a phase where he really liked making what he called inventions, which was just like a bunch of random materials that he would put together in some sort of weird shape. So I have like a box that I keep in his room of random recyclables or just things I think that he might want to use someday for an invention. And it just has like, you know, bottle caps and like pieces of broken toys and cardboard and, you know, paper towel rolls. And then every once in a while, I'll be like, let's go build some inventions. And we get out the hot glue gun and the invention box and they can just build stuff.
Yeah. You know, they've got one heck of a Lego box down there that they dive into from time to time. It seems like they're interest in Legos comes and goes, but it never really goes away. It always comes back.
Yeah. And then let them decide how to approach projects and chores. So like if they're in an educational environment where they get free rein of how to do their projects, that's great. Like, you know, they don't necessarily want to do things the way it's prescribed. They want to be able to have that creative approach. If you're a homeschooler, you know, letting them have freedom to design their own projects. Chores, let them have to decide how they want to approach their chores. You know, maybe they want to do it in different order from you or with a different tool. Let them try that out. Also, and this is one that I've not provided a very good example of because we talked about how annoying we find Riker's visionary ideas, but let them try some of their visionary ideas. So listen to and add input to their ideas. Support them by helping putting some of them to work in the real world. So like maybe we do this summer, let him try out that yard sale on the road and see how that goes with his really poorly priced items. let them figure it out for themselves. Try not to squash it with too much reality. Like the instinct can be like, okay, you're never going to be able to sell anything for that price, you know, but they're going to learn it best if they get to experience it for themselves and adjust.
Oh yeah. I the one part of that whole, the whole setup I would like to see is see him negotiate with other people because he loves to negotiate, but his negotiation isn't always attached to reality. So when he starts negotiating with other people, it'd be interesting to see how he reacts to their reaction because he's just used to working with us on that stuff.
I mean, he negotiates with his friends a lot at school, though, as far as like trading cards and,
and
Beyblades and stuff.
I guess I was thinking him negotiating with an adult who says, you know, you want $5 for that thing and see how he reacts to that. He's probably going to look at us and and try and bring us in for help.
Shrug. You're like, what do you think, bud? I'm trying to think when I was a kid, my visionary ideas that I would try out. Because I remember like having different ideas for like clubs to do with my friends. And like I always had these big ideas and I was always disappointed by the fact that other people didn't want to participate in them with me. I don't know if you have any recollections of that kind of thing as you were a kid, when you were a kid.
I remember at one point I wanted to have more video games than I had. Every kid's probably felt that way, right? They're expensive. They're, you know, $40, $50 or whatever. And I wanted more video games to play on Atari or Nintendo, whatever. So I convinced friends to chip in. And if everyone chipped in a little bit, I could buy it. And then they could come over and play whenever they wanted. And, you know, I got a couple games that way. But then I think people kind of realized that the game was at my house all the time. And, you know, then it got a little weird because, you know, it'd be like friends that you play with in lots of different ways. But I think then they felt like, oh, when I was at Eric's house, we should play that game that I gave him some money for because I got to get my $5 worth that I put into it. So it got a little weird and it didn't last that long. I thought it would be great. I thought I'd get a lot more out of it than I did, but I really only got a couple of games.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Very entrepreneurial.
Yeah, that was well before the subscription-based model was common like it is today.
You're ahead of your time.
I guess so.
One thing I remember is that I always had really interesting ideas for birthday parties and themes and like games we'd play at the parties. And my mom was always a really good sport of helping me bring those to life. Because my mom, she's always up for everything. So I really appreciate that about her. And my friends were, for the most part, would participate. You know, I remember I had one where it was like, there was some sort of game that went along with lunch. And it was like, say we're having hot dogs. It'd be like all the ingredients for hot dogs, but you had to win different levels of a game to be able to get the different ingredients. So you might just get like a bun and ketchup and mustard and not have won the hot dog itself.
That's depressing.
It was terrible. I never participated. I just made my friends participate in it.
Did you end up giving them hot dogs?
I don't remember.
I hope so.
It's great. It's a good idea. It made people really want to win, you know.
Want to win the hot dog.
Yeah. Or the bun, because otherwise you just get the dog without the bun. I think we did that with the ice cream sundaes, too. It's a good idea. When it comes to issues in the home, so anything like, you know, there's a fight between siblings, there's a rule that's not being followed consistently, they're having a hard time with a routine, as these types tend to have, involve them in coming up with a solution, because they can use their novel problem-solving skills to come up with a solution, and then they're going to be more likely to buy in on it because they're excited about this new thing that they come up with. So, and we, I kind of brought these up on the last intuition function that we talked about, because this is similar. But like, your guitar practicing is too loud for your sister when she's trying to study. Do you have an idea to make sure that you both get what we need here, that she gets her quiet time to study and that you get your guitar practicing time? Or you seem to have a hard time with things that need to get done at night, like brushing your teeth. What's an idea to make this easier every day and see what they come up with? Maybe we should try that tonight and see what Riker says.
Yeah, I mean, I think Riker is good at acknowledging that a problem is a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, he won't deny that, okay, this is causing a problem for you. And if you can get to that point, then yeah, that intuition will kick in where he'll be like, oh, there's a problem. I want to help solve it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, getting him to the point where you agree there's a problem, you probably have it going your way.
Yeah. And then the last one, you know, try not to give them a hard time about daydreaming or being in their head or in the clouds. They'll probably get this a lot their whole life at school, activities, and so on. And just remember that when they're doing this, they're using their best asset. They're using their visionary, their problem-solving skills, their pattern-observing skills, and that's something that's really going to bring them, it's going to bring a lot to their life in the future. You know, I mean, obviously, if it's at the detriment of their grades, then a problem needs to be solved. And there you go. You can involve them in the problem solving. I noticed you're not paying attention enough in math to do well on your tests. What is the solution that you think we could do? So to sum it all up, insightful intuition users take in information by looking for hidden meanings and patterns and extrapolating them into a bigger picture and an insight for the future. Kids who use insightful intuition are observant, insightful, and drawn to novelty, and they have a hard time with practical and routine details. They need time and space to themselves, outlets for their creativity, and the freedom to come up with solutions to things themselves. Thank you so much to Daddy Eric for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have any other questions about insightful intuition before we close out the episode?
No, I don't think so. I mean, all this sounds very natural to me, and you know, when I see Riker doing it, I definitely understand what's going on. It's just a matter of some things I can look at it and feel like, oh yeah, I know totally what he's doing, and then other parts it's the opposite. It's like it'll annoy me right away. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how he changes over time, because it's just like he'll become more self-aware of those things and won't do them, because he'll realize, oh, if I do that, that other people will interpret it a different way.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a challenge, because I understand it so well that, you know, it either doesn't bother me at all, or it pushes my buttons and I go from 0 to 100. It's one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to, I don't have any INFJ children in my life. I only have my own memories of myself, which I'm sure are distorted in one way or another, but I think it would look for quite different in an INFJ, and definitely different in your ENFJs and your ENTJs too, because it's the more their extroverted function is more on the surface, and then this one's kind of below supporting it. But you can check out the show notes for this episode and all of our episodes at familypersonalities.com/the episode number. This episode number is 50, so familypersonalities.com/50 for the show notes. Next, I always like to say what's coming up next, and I'm not sure, actually. I think I'm actually going to have Riker on to talk about himself. I was talking about it with him in bed last night, and he was interested, and I was, you know, he saw me kind of working on this outline, and I said, well, this is actually about your personality type. And so I was reading some of the things to him, and he just kept saying, it's, you know, 8-year-old lingo. Instead of saying definitely, he kept saying deaf. I'd say another thing, he'd be like, oh yeah, deaf. So I asked him if he wanted to kind of talk about what he sees in himself on those things, so I might do a little episode like that with him. And my mom's visiting this week, so maybe I'll take a trip down memory lane with her and see if she can say what I was like as a kid. Mm. Although I know her memory always seems a little skewed, but we'll see. Don't forget that you can donate and support the podcast at familypersonalities.com/donate. It really would help me cover all the costs associated with doing this podcast every week. and let me help you parent more easily and peacefully through the use of personality type at familypersonalities.com/services. You can email me at familypersonalitiespod@gmail.com, follow me on Instagram and Facebook at familypersonalities, and the website is familypersonalities.com. I'll see you next week.
That's it for our show this week. We would like to apologize to our children, our parents, our spouses,
and anyone else we may have lovingly thrown under the bus this episode.
Thank you for listening, and catch us next time on the Family Personalities Podcast.